For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance and Metal Injection. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
Hey, this is World Dane from Sanctuary. You're listening to MSR Rock Out with your fucking geek out. Can I say fuck?
Welcome back, my friends, to MSR Cast, your metal podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Kerry the Metal Geek, along with
Sean the Metal Pigeon.
How the hell are you, man?
Pretty good.
So yeah. let's kill the elephant in the room, since it's the holidays, the white elephant in the room.
Yeah.
We recorded an episode recently, or we tried to, and we had studio problems.
Halfway through it.
Yeah, we got about halfway through it. We had studio problems. And we lost the entire episode, pretty much. And then my computer, our editing suite, let's say that, it stopped working. So I had to get that fixed. Happened. Thanks to our good friend over at the Apple Store who hooked me up. And yeah. The guy named Gabe over there did a phenomenal job. I was sitting there in the mall moving shit off my hard drive to a backup hard drive for like 4 hours.
That's a weird situation.
Yeah. We were at that mall for like 5 hours that day, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fixed and it's working and we're recording now. Huh. I'm super happy.
Was it one of those situations where you thought about maybe this was it for your computer, and then maybe something had screwed it up irreparably?
No, I knew it was fixable. I just didn't know how to do it.
Yeah.
I'm more of a, my background's more of a PC type of guy, but I'm using an iMac because it is simpler to use and
right.
It doesn't have as many problems until it starts running slower than fucking balls.
Yeah, and this was due to the update that happened, right?
Supposedly, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was willing to, like, upgrade the hard drive or whatever we needed to do to get it working again. But he was able to work around that. So if you're listening to this show, Gabe, appreciate it.
Genius.
He started listening. he is an actual genius working at the Genius Bar.
Yeah.
That's pretty rare, but yeah, he went, I think he really went above and beyond what he needed to do to help us.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's really cool.
We should shout out John for showing up that night.
Yeah, so John fucking Winningham from Texas Metal Show showed up. We were doing our tribute episode to Warrell Dane because it was like a couple days after it happened, and we started recording. Shit went down. We started drinking.
It was just the weirdest problem because it would just, your computer was like minutes and minutes behind.
Yeah, it wasn't able to catch up. I mean, and it was doing that before, but it got really bad. Like you would click on something and it would take like 5 minutes for the computer.
Yeah.
It's something to do with the memory, not being, I don't know. He said something, he was troubleshooting everything and, you know, able to reformat it completely through some back end way and then reinstall the operating system and took it home and fine.
Yeah.
There's nothing more awkward than going the week before Christmas to the mall, carrying a big ass 27-inch iMac through the mall into the parking lot.
I imagine parking was a nightmare.
No. Well, I went there on Friday, and during the day, in the morning, I was like, hey, I told him what was going on in the front. They're like, well, there's no more appointments till like next week, but what you can do is come here like 8 in the morning. We open at 8, get here before we open, and put your name down. They saw us within like 45 minutes.
Wow.
So we just walked around the mall a little bit and waited till they texted me and went back into the store and, you know, started working on it. We were there till maybe like 1:30 or 2 o'clock, something like that. But
you basically got in without an appointment, basically.
Yeah. And it was sucked because we were like, okay, my wife went with me like, cause I needed somebody to help.
Right.
Let's get some breakfast when we get to the mall. No place open for breakfast at the fucking mall. Not even Taco Bell or Chick-fil-A, because we were there on a Saturday, but, you know, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So we, like, I think our breakfast was, like, a pretzel or something like that.
Yeah.
Then we went for lunch after that. But we're working. We can bring you some more metal. I'm happy.
Yeah.
Metal Geeks has kind of come back because it's been, like, a month since we recorded that show with the holidays and then the computer not working.
And you know it's been a while since Metal Geeks because I'm caught up listening to all of them, too.
I know, right? Yeah. So, and speaking of, we're going to get into our 2017 rewind soon, but we're going to bring Sean the Metal Pigeon on to an episode of Metal Geeks. You best get your movies and all that other best of.
I feel like I got stuff to say. I just saw stuff. I mean, I saw Star Wars, recently.
Yeah, we haven't even discussed that on the show yet because
this
whole situation.
Yeah, so
that'll be fun. George is wrong already, but
his opinion is, he's wrong.
So let's talk about the first song we played on this episode.
Yeah. So this episode is, and you know, part of, I think, that this episode and the next episode.
Yes,
we're trying to cover stuff that we've missed in 2017.
There was so much metal released this past year. So preparing my rewind, I have my top albums down to a paltry 73.
That's too much. I think that's just a list of the stuff you listen to, isn't it?
No.
No?
No. I mean, a lot of it towards the bottom of it is, But yeah,
when I was getting my nominees pool together, like in early November, mm-hmm. I was like, man, this is kind of shallow for a pool. Normally there's like 30 albums or something, and I narrow it down to 10. And this time there was only like 15 to 17.
Really?
But then when I started like, okay, yep. hitting back what I missed.
That's what I did.
And what I do is I go look at other people's lists, mm-hmm. which I hate to do that, but I try not to let it influence mine. I really do go out of my way to do that.
I agree. What I did is I created a bunch of playlists on Spotify of albums that I missed compared from different people that I know. Like I used Maurice from Blues Funeral is one because I know his style is, he knows a band that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the, like that drummer guy, I used his list and in different aggregators, just different metal websites that I used to try to, a lot of it I don't agree with. I listen to it. I'm just like, some of it's not me.
Yeah.
But one thing I noticed, there's a lot less power metal on my list this year. There's a lot less power metal this year completely.
Definitely. Yeah. There was, it wasn't the year for power metal.
No.
Year
for death metal for sure.
Definitely for death metal.
And newer bands that I'd never heard of that are really good too.
Yeah.
We'll get to some of those honorable mentions down the road too, but.
Well, this band, Satan's Hallow, they're one of those bands I found when I was watching Banger TV's kind of staff year end, best of.
I watched a little bit of that.
And one of the reviewers mentioned them and I was like, oh, that sounds really good. And I took a listen to the album and it was so, and I bought the album on their Bandcamp.
Yeah.
And it's just a punchy kind of new wave of British heavy metal album. But this band's from Chicago.
Oh, okay.
And again, just like Unleash the Archers, it didn't really register to me that the singer was female.
Mm-hmm. I could tell she had sort of that that raspy-ish Doro style a little bit.
Yeah, I guess it took like a song or so before I realized like, oh wait a second, who is this vocalist? And it's this girl named this lady named Mandy Martillo, who I think is amazing. She has that kind of, like you said, Doro-ish voice, which I think we use that as a comparison too much.
Yeah, we do.
But it is, she has that sort of side to her, but it's also sort of a Joan Jett raspiness to it.
It's weird with female-fronted metal. It's either, like you said, the Joan Jett, Doro style, you know, rock style.
Yeah.
Or it's over-the-top, operatic type stuff. And there's some people that do it in the middle, which... Yeah. One of my top 10 is that style.
Yeah.
But it is very polarizing in that it's either one way or the other, you know?
There was a time when it just seemed to be all symphonic. And in the past, like, 4 years, a lot of singers in this vein have come out. But she's great, but the band is just on fire. The entire album is just like that, like short, punchy, just straight to the point, straight ahead, heavy metal, traditionally rooted. And it doesn't sound rehashed or tired.
Right.
And it's just one of those albums where like when I need to get kind of energized up for the day, I'll put that on in the background and just kind of like, you know, nothing.
I'd be interested in hearing the rest of the album. I've just heard that one song.
It's nothing complicated. It's just good heavy metal, basically.
And there's nothing wrong with it. It's very new wave of British heavy metal style. Yeah. Even the production of it, it's. You could tell me this came out in like 82 and I'd be like, okay.
And if you saw the album art, it's just kind of this like horror movie type silhouette, like image.
Yeah.
You'll totally think like, oh, that's gotta be some old metal band from like 83 or something.
So the next band is something you brought to the table this week too. I think I've heard a little bit of this album, but it's not on my major radar for some reason.
Well, I mean, and the thing is Elvin King, I got the promo for this. They fell off my radar too.
Singing Elvish?
No, but you know Elvin King though. Yeah, I mean they've been around for ages.
Yeah.
I first heard them way back in 2001. A friend of mine had bought their album based on
back in '01.
Like he thought it was sort of like he thought it'd be like a folk metal thing, and boy was he wrong. Elvin King is always, they're a weird band for me because I've never been a big fan because they just have been so inconsistent throughout their career, but they've always been fascinating to me because they have one of the most unique vocalists in power metal, a guy who I always, I don't know how you're supposed to say his nickname, Damna, mm-hmm. David Morales is the guy's name, but
Dave Morales?
Yeah.
Okay.
He has this voice that's almost like a mix of like Bon Jovi mixed with a pop punk singer. At least that's the way I've always characterized him. And I sort of like him because of that, because of how different he is. And
okay,
the thing is, sometimes their albums just like go too far in this weird sort of, they had an album. Okay. And here's what really pushed me away from them. I was always sort of paying attention to them on and off. And then 2007, they had that one album out called Scythe, and it was just such a weird transition into sort of like very pop punk emo, American emo influenced, where they're incorporating that with folk metal influences with power metal. And I think at that time I just wasn't ready to handle that. And so, and I remember that music video where the band's walking through these like mountains or something, and they all look like they're members of Bring Me the Horizon or something. And I was just like, all right, that's enough. You guys are just, you lost the plot.
You're talking about Damna?
Yeah.
Damna Goris is what he goes by or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. David Moras. This band is from Italy. So
yeah,
they do have a little bit of a sicker accent.
You wouldn't know they're from Italy, because half the time they sound like they're from the States, or they sound like they're from
musically. Yeah.
They could be from Europe, like somewhere in like Germany or something. The Italian influence only comes through like it comes through a lot more on this album.
Why is that?
Where it's because it's more, they're going for a more grander style here. But again, Elvin King are an anomaly, because they have moments on this album, which I swear to God are very pop punk. I don't use that term lightly. It really does remind me of just sort of like kind of slightly on purpose sloppy, but they rein it in with the power metal and the folk metal.
Okay.
It's just his voice that always brings that to mind. And I know a lot of people like either love or hate his voice. And he really does fall in that spectrum of, if you can't get into his vocals, you'll hate the band, I think. Because there's nothing about them overwhelmingly that can make up for that.
So let's let everybody make up their mind.
I just want to say this is it's a fun album.
So
it's not one of the best of the year, but it's super fun.
Is it a spoiler, or is it a...
In a power metal light year, this was a highlight, put it that way.
Let's do that. Okay, so let's check out Elvin King. This is Dragon's Maelstrom from Secrets of the Magic Grimoire. That came out November 10th, 2017. Since we're talking about albums that we missed, we wanted to give a time frame. So The Satan's Hollow came out in early April, April 1st.
Yeah.
And then this Elvin King album came out in November 10th. So Elvin, this isn't the guy from The Cosby Show, is it?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not Alvin King.
No, Alvin was like, like the one of the daughter's like boyfriends or something?
Oh, yeah. Sandra's fiance, right?
Sandra, like yeah. He wasn't the king?
Yeah.
So it was not Elvin King?
No. Right.
Moving on. Here's Dragoon's Maelstrom. We'll be right back. And we have returned to the show. We just listened to a band that's near and dear to me now, a band called Wolfheart. I'm sorry, Wolfheart.
Wolfheart.
Wolfheart. The name of the song we heard was called World on Fire, and I'll let you pronounce the album title.
You know, this is one of those album titles that I have no idea.
Ties. It's, let me spell it out, okay? It's T-Y-H-J-Y-Y-S.
I bet it's something like Tihis, you know?
Sure.
Like I'll, the I'll J is that. Silent or something.
Yeah, this has jumped into a top spot for me. I freaking adore this album. It's, it's top-notch fucking Melodez, man. Catchy, the riffing is amazing, the guitar riffs. It's in a way, it's a one-man show, you know what I mean? The main guy in the band is a guy named Tuomas Sokoyan.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I'm saying that right.
Tuomas.
Whatever. Thomas. Let's say it that way. He does vocals, guitars, rhythm, melodic, acoustic songwriting for the band, does all the lyrics. He has a bass player and drummer on this album and another guitar player. Usually he does a lot of it himself.
Salkonen is the, he's well known, he should be well known to both of us, but he sails under the radar, but he's the guy behind Before the Dawn,
mm-hmm.
Black Sun Aeon.
Which I loved Black Sun Aeon.
But he's not really like a known figure
not America, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's just not like a guy whose name gets thrown around.
He should, though.
Because I think he shifts from band to band. He changes projects whenever he feels like.
Not anymore. This is his main project. He's given up the ghost on everything else. So it was a side project and turned into his main focus.
Yeah.
So,
They seem to have the higher profile of all the things he's done.
Yeah. None of the other bands are around anymore. He's put them, basically put them all to bed to focus on this band. And he's been quality putting out albums for every 2 years.
Yeah. We actually, I think we covered them back in this album came out in like April or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We talked about them on the podcast. I'm not sure if we played them or not. March 3rd. I love this album, and I listened to it steadily throughout the year, and a lot in the past couple of weeks I was trying to, because it definitely is one of the better albums, best albums of the year. You know, I think the reason why I didn't get to listen to it as much over time, because other things were, you know, vying for my attention,
mm-hmm.
so I sort of let it slip by the wayside, but going back and listening to it, it's, you know, funny you're mentioning Melodeath. For me, when I hear this band, I think, they are kind of death metal with melody, but they're not what I would conventionally consider Melodeath. No. They're sort of like, they remind me of actually like if you took Enslaved and mixed them with a little bit of Opeth. They have that kind of they have that progressive drive to their music.
Let's make a new term up. It's progressive, blackened, proggy. Let's use prog again. Melodeath.
Progressive, blackened, proggy Melodeath.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Power metal-y.
Yeah, power metal.
We'll just throw that in there, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I remember when I was listening to the Enslaved album, which I ended up not liking that much at all.
What?
Yeah, I am.
If this was not just an audio podcast, you would see the look on my face right now.
Well, I guess we'll have that debate later in the year end. Album, I remember when I was listening to that album, the one urge I had was to go back and listen to that Wolfheart album. Because I was like, this is not doing anything for me. Some of these, you know, I need something a little bit more instantaneous right now. And I went back and listened to this, and it sounded so good. And the song we played is really good. It has that nice little guitar part at the end.
Yeah.
But there's a song on here called The Flood, which is which is an amazing song.
Yeah, I agree on that one.
One of those like examples of a band that knows how to use space.
It was these two songs, when I was going to pick out which track to play, they were pretty interchangeable for me. Yeah. But I figured this one had a little bit of more of a catchy chorus type, you know. I like the keyboard background in this song, the way how it interplays with the actual melody of the guitars.
Yeah.
And I love the like a couple minutes in the song that he starts using this like piano part. It works so well.
There's something also like folky about this album, subtly. Mm-hmm. It's not like an overt, what I would call folk metal, but it came out around the same time as this other album by this band called King of Asgard.
I remember thinking,
man, this is like, because I had just written off folk metal for the past couple of years. Honestly, just written the entire subgenre off as just toxic and tainted with really bad bands playing bad music. And then these two albums came out, the King of Asgard album and this one. And I remember just thinking like, huh, okay, these are bands who kind of remind me of that old spirit of folk metal. And so throughout the year, I've kind of looked at them as touchstones, these two albums. And
what about
when Venusaur came out?
Yeah.
And then I knew like, wow, something's up with this year. And I talk about that later, like more in the year end recap episodes. But
what about that band that actually has Vinter in their name?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. I think there's something to be said about that album. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, this has sort of been this quiet resurgence of folk metal within 2017. That's my narrative for the year.
And when you say folk metal, you're talking about this kind of ilk. Because a lot of people, when they hear folk metal right away,
I know what they're thinking about. Yeah.
They're going to start thinking about like Olivetti and a lot of that.
Well, you know, the thing is, Olivetti, I think, is very much a part of the resurgence this year with the album they released.
Yeah.
And I think we're jumping ahead of ourselves talking about this stuff. But Wolfheart, huge factor in that. And I can't wait to talk about that later in that episode. Because I think there is something developing within of bands who are going back to a sort of a natural, more rustic spirit in their sound and getting away from this thing that folk metal has been dragged through the mud with the trolls and the ale drinking and all the cartoon imagery and stuff,
yes,
you know, getting away from that
exactly
stuff.
That's exactly right.
So this album absolutely is that kind of, especially I don't know if you ever saw the music video for the Flood.
I did not.
It's just a band playing in this rehearsal space room, black and white, but then they intersperse it with these shots of like Norway and nature and
winter and stuff
and
like
winter.
That.
And it's just like this really good,
it totally makes sense,
arty music video that makes you, it brings you into the mind, the mindset of the album.
And these guys are Finnish, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that puts them over the top for me.
Yeah. Absolutely. One of the best albums of the year.
So we heard before Wolfheart, we heard Elven King.
Yeah.
What else can you say about it? I finally listened to it. And I really, what surprised me, is, you know, I think I've had this on in the background, but I wasn't really paying that much attention to it.
We were just talking about how it was sort of a down year for power metal.
Yeah.
And this was one of the highlights for me.
This was definitely a highlight so far. I really enjoyed the growled vocals that were going along with the melody line when the guy was singing.
Yeah.
That I wasn't expecting that at all.
It's funny, like I'm sure, like ever since metalcore has been around, that might be like a tired cliche thing to do for for some people's perspectives. But there's something about the way they pull it off that makes it sound like still like new and cool and interesting.
It worked for them. It really does.
Yeah, this is maybe the strongest album they've done in a while. Although I need to, having said that, I didn't listen to the one they put out in 2014. I didn't listen to the one they did in 2012. I honestly kind of checked out on the band after Scythe, which was, I probably should go back and listen to that album too, because I might actually
like
it now.
You might have appreciation for it now.
I mean, that album was such a shocker in the power metal world at that time that I think a lot of
people wrote that band. But your tastes have changed since then too.
And things have changed. Yeah, it's 10 years on. So
speaking of 10 years on, let's talk about this next band we're going to play.
All right.
Do you know much about Galactic Cowboys at all?
I'm aware of what they sound like. I've never really paid much attention to them, I think because of the name.
Okay.
I'll just be honest.
So let's go back further than 10 years. So the last album they put out was called Let It Go. That was June of 2000. So it's been 17 years since the last album.
Wow.
These guys are born and raised right here in Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
I went and saw them. We have a great record store here called Cactus Records. Been around for many, many years. They do carry some metal, but it's not as much as I would like. But
right, yeah.
They had these guys come in when the album came out and did an acoustic in-store, which is really cool. They did songs from the first couple of albums, and they played stuff from the new album. And they all stuck around and did autographs and all that kind of stuff. And I gotta say, I love this album. It's catchy. The if you like, you know, prog, so I want to call them metal, but they're more rocking. But if they're definitely influenced by the Beatles,
yeah.
Because if you like harmony, like four part vocal harmony, these guys do it the best, man.
I think that was because I remember knowing that they were a Houston band,
yeah,
and but never feeling inclined to go check them out because I thought that they were. Well, in my mind, I always viewed them as a rock band, I guess. And I was just like, in that, you know, when you're committed to metal, it's hard to make time for rock.
If you have an appreciation for King's X, that type of stuff, you would definitely like Galactic Cowboys. I can't say for sure on all their albums because I sort of checked out on them during, I guess, the middle part of their career. The first two or three albums were really good. But there's like three or four I've never even heard, so I might have to go back and listen to those, you know, and catch up.
Yeah.
It's the beauty of Spotify, I guess.
Yeah.
But I bought the CD from them at the show, got them to autograph it. I'll tell you a quick aside when we listen to the song. It's pretty funny. Let's get into it. This I picked the song. It's called Zombies. It's a cool premise of lyrically, it's basically guy finds love on the last day of Earth. It's pretty cool. Yeah. It's a very catchy song. This whole album is really catchy. If you like that style at all, please go check them out. Here is some Galactic Cowboys in your face from Houston, Texas. And this came out, what did we say? Came out November 17th, so it was pretty recent.
Yeah.
So check it out.
Fighting zombies day and night.
Of the axe.
Holy thrash metal, Batman.
I love this song.
Okay,
so much.
Okay, so we've sort of talked a little bit about top list from all these company, all these metal sites and all this kind of stuff, and Power Trip is definitely on everybody's top album of the year.
Yeah.
I have to say it's pretty fucking thrash-tastic. It's a phenomenal album. It's fun.
It's really fun, and it's a black mark on us for missing it when it came back out in February.
I saw them a couple years ago. You know that?
Yeah.
They opened up for Anthrax and Def Haven, and I walked in like on their second to last song.
Yeah.
Because trying to get one of these big venues, it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
You get there, and fucking wait in line, try to get in, but. They blew me away just by watching like a song and a half.
Yeah,
I was like, these are the guys from Dallas, right? They're Texas boys, yeah. Right there. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, that's two black marks against us. One, there was a Texas band.
Yeah,
and then it just for some reason eluded us. But I did start to see things about it like later in the year, and I was always like, yeah, I'll get to it. And then Blaine from Banger put it as his best album of the year. So I saw that. I went back and listened to it. I was like, "Oh, this is like one of the most fun metal albums of the year."
It really is. It's not. A lot of people give some of these the new wave of thrash metal,
right.
The retro thrash, all that kind of stuff. A lot of people give them shit for it, but I think Power Trip they sort of walk that line between trying new stuff and then being that retro style.
Yeah,
they.
But, the thing that I think, because I was thinking about that exact same thing, the thing that separates them from those other new thrash bands, mm-hmm. I think, is that I don't. Whenever I think about Power Trip and this album, I don't think about them trying to do something that's been done before.
Yeah.
I just think of them existing in this time, doing the music they're going to do. I don't really consider them a retro band in that sense because
their influence. They definitely wear their influences on their sleeve.
It is apparent, yeah, where they're coming from.
I mean,
but I think their songwriting is just so tight that it overrides all that stuff.
I mean, this stuff. They have other influences too. You can definitely hear some of the riffing style and like the way the songs are from like an Entombed type of band that early 90s, death metal style.
Yeah,
but you can hear like the late 80s thrash riffing throughout this whole thing is great.
It very like an almost Annihilator-esque riffing style.
Speaking of Annihilator, put a phenomenal album out this year. Yeah. We're going to talk about that.
These guys, they deserve all the praise they're getting all across the board.
It's crazy how much love they're getting.
They're also one of the few bands that have broken through to like some of the mainstream music websites. As like,
did I say Entombed or say Obituary earlier? I meant Obituary.
Obituary?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can hear that. Yeah. Yeah. They definitely have the more Obituary production rather than any Entombed stuff, you know?
Because it's a little, I'm trying to say it in the nicest way possible. It's a little sloppy.
Yeah,
but
like just a touch.
In a great way, you know what I mean?
It's almost like, and sometimes it's hard to just find musical terms because I'm not, you know, I'm not versed in that kind of stuff.
You're much better than I am.
But for me, this band sounds like, if you're, you know, they sound like a band that would be playing in a converted, like, garage, or some sort of, like, auto garage or something. They're just greasy. The sound is greasy and sort of, like, you know, the riffs kind of sound like an engine, you know, at times.
It's real and it's true, and you know, it's there are people that fucking love metal and they love playing it. And it's great that they're getting so much love and so much promotion. They're going to get bigger and better, you know, touring packages and all this kind of stuff. They're going to get big.
The video for this song also is the best metal video of the year. Absolutely, the best metal video of the year. And there were some good ones that came out this year. Some others that I'm thinking of right now, but this one had this sort of viscerality to it with in time, and they cut it in time with the actual song to where it had like the most impact, like all these images of like war and destruction, you know, like classic metal stuff. But just the footage of the band playing looked like it was from like 91 or something. Yeah. Just that kind of grainy style to it. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. They're a great, phenomenal band, and I don't know why I'm saying phenomenal so much.
Phenomenal.
They're phenomenal.
Speaking of the 90s.
What?
I was going to say Galactic Cowboys.
Yeah. Going back, I saw them back in the day. I've only seen them twice now. Well, once back early in the day when they opened up for King's X, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw them do the acoustic show. I didn't get to go to the actual album release that same night, actually. Or no, the next night. But I did go to GWAR that night. GWAR and Ghoul opened up. I got to see Ghoul, which I'd never seen before, which it features, I believe it's Leon Del Muerte from Impaled is in that band.
Cool.
So, do you know who Ghoul is?
I've heard of them before. I'm not sure.
Take a little bit. They're definitely influenced by what GWAR does with stage antics. And
okay.
They all wear like masks and stuff on stage. So, they're fun. They're a lot of fun. But GWAR, man, that place was just covered. It was the House of Blues, just covered in bodily fluid.
What year was this?
This was last month.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
In 2017.
Yeah, okay. That might have been where you mentioned that name from.
What's that?
Ghoul.
Yeah. I mean, I'd never heard them before that night, and they're fun.
Yeah.
But GWAR focused a lot on the brand new album. Had a great stage presence set up and everything. it wasn't as good as the last time I saw them when they were, you know, basically with the tribute tour for Odorous.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, GWAR still has them, man. They're still a lot of fun to see live. The new album that came out this year, the Blood of something, I can't think of what it's called right now.
The Blood of GWAR?
It's not the Blood of GWAR. Close to that, though. I have it pulled up here somewhere.
The Galactic Cowboys song we played before, the Power Trip song, I was thinking that it sounded, it reminded me of, and I don't know if anyone's going to remember this band because you don't remember them. That's surprising to me. But Sponge, this band from the 90s called Sponge. Maybe it was just that song.
I've heard them before. I just don't remember them.
Yeah, that song reminded me so much of Sponge.
The Blood of Gods is the GWAR album.
Blood of Gods. Yeah, we should have just assumed it was Gods.
Yeah, because they are.
But yeah, it's good. I mean, I just don't listen to a lot of rock anymore, so it's just,
I don't really that much either. But this has always been one of the bands that I really enjoyed.
Which sounds like a stupid thing to say, right? Like, we don't listen to a lot of rock. But the thing is, when you're so ensconced in the metal world, you kind of just get blinders on to everything else.
I don't listen to a lot of new rock. I'll say that much.
I just don't even know what's going on.
I don't either. I go back to classic stuff, which I've never listened to before. I'm like, I've always wanted to hear this album. And of course, again, we're not sponsored by Spotify, but right. the beauty of it is like, hey, I've never heard this Deep Purple album. I've never heard this, you know, Tom Petty album. I've never heard this Elton John album or whatever the fuck it is. I actually listened to an Elton John album. I'm like from the 70s. I'm like, this is actually more rocking than I even like anticipated. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not, it's not his, you know, pop shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, and I don't know how we start talking about that. But like Billy Joel and just all, yes, and I started getting to King Crimson and all these bands that I've always wanted to listen to, but without going...
No being, financial commitment to it.
Right, yeah. No financial commitment without being, you know, gifted the albums from your parents or
right,
your
yeah.
uncles or whatever who would leave that kind of stuff to you. I just never had that.
I didn't have any of that.
I had a lot of ELO growing up because my dad loved ELO.
Yeah.
So I listened to a lot of ELO.
The only thing my parents really introduced me to was like old. They would listen to oldies.
Yeah,
all the time. Well, so,
yeah, you know, back when we had an oldie station,
yeah.
that's all my parents listened to was like yeah. the oldies.
94.5.
Was that what it was?
I think so. Yeah,
I think that's probably where my love of the Monkees came from. Is from my parents' love of the oldies, you know,
yeah.
and the Beatles and things like that. So,
when it like with rock, I think I was just telling you when we were listening to the song that. When I used to listen or read Classic Rock magazine, it's still in print all the time. And yeah. when I stopped reading it like regularly, I just sort of drifted away from rock entirely, and just I didn't have like a way to get access to it. And now when I write, think of rock, I think about like Imagine Dragons and all that kind of stuff.
That stuff is horrible.
Like that, modern rock.
So, who's your favorite rock band of all time?
Rock band of all time. Maybe I don't know. Guns N' Roses, maybe.
Are they rock though?
Well, they're hard rock.
Yeah,
they're very. I mean,
yeah.
So rock, so traditionally rock.
Well, yeah. I mean, that first, you know, Appetite for Destruction, I had a cassette copy of that, and I listened to it over and over and over in the 80s when it came out in 87.
Yeah,
man, I was supposed to listen to it because I was only like, I think I was like 12 or 13 when it came out.
It's hard to make the distinction between rock and hard rock and metal sometimes.
You're talking about Classic Rock magazine. So what bands were your top?
Well, I mean, I would always just be interested in reading like the old legacy features and like, you know, the story behind this Def Leppard album recording or I think honestly the Scorpions might be my favorite rock band of all time though.
I agree with that. I think they're more rock slash metal.
Yeah, but they never really... There was only one album where you could really say they went for the metal riff.
Yeah.
Everything else is just rock. Like, dant, 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 you know?
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, I'd say the Scorpions are honestly my favorite rock band. Because Guns N' Roses, yeah, they walk that line too much. But the last rock band, new rock band I've listened to, I can't even think of one. Honestly, that was exciting to me.
I really enjoyed the Deep Purple album that came out in 2017.
Yeah.
Really good.
You know, Person might have been the last one.
Person, yeah.
That Maurice introduced me to. Yeah. I just don't listen. I don't even... Whenever people talk about like the death of rock and stuff, I go, yeah, I could see that.
It's alternative rock is what...
It's just this garbage they play on the radio. I've heard it all before. I have no interest in it. Someone tell me what a good rock band is I should be listening to that's making new music now.
Send us an email to msrcast@gmail.com.
Tweet me or something.
Tweet at us. You can tweet at msrcast or at Metal Geeks, or you can tweet at The Metal Pigeon.
I really need a recommendation because I'm clueless when it comes to that stuff now.
I mean, there's a lot of 60s stuff that I like The Doors and like the Beatles and that kind of stuff, but I really like Tom Petty a lot. Like you said, the Scorpions.
Yeah, but I mean, so much of that is just like, you know, going back to like history,
it feels like
it's
like,
yeah, history. It's just like, who is a new band and stuff that's doing that?
I was sad. I was really sad.
I actually liked Kings of Leon.
I don't know that,
but they're like, you know, kind of a modern band, but they had some interesting stuff. I thought they were okay.
Okay.
But then, you know, they sort of just drifted off my radar too. So
speaking of not drifting off our radar, let's talk about the next band we're going to play.
Okay.
Black Anvil. This fucking album hit me like a freight train, dude.
Yeah, this was a January release.
I know. So I don't think I listened to this album until January, but like late October-ish, November.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because I heard start people hearing talking about it, and I saw a video on YouTube for this song that we're actually going to play, as was, blew me away. And I think I listened to this album 20, 30 times in a row without getting tired of it, without being bored of it. It just, it skyrocketed up into the top of my list, man. I'll tell you that much.
All right.
But
I want to hear this. I have no idea who these guys are.
They're from a black metal band, like a modern blackish metal band. So think about Enslaved, what they kind of stuff like progressive black metal. They're from New York City, and I guess the band name, it's a cross between a Black Sabbath reference and a Judas Priest song. So I guess between the Anvil. Hammer and the Anvil.
Okay, okay, I get it, yeah.
And Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
It works, I guess. It's a good title. Cool. Yeah. You know, I don't think I ever listened to him because the name Black Anvil always had that post-black metal, you know, metalcore style to the name.
Mm, yeah.
And I think that's where I sort of skipped him over.
Yeah.
So let's get into this, and we're going to do some more discussion on this after Sean gets to hear it. And you guys get to hear it too.
Thank you.
And some Annihilator for your ears right there, man.
Yeah.
That is fucking
vicious.
That, man, this new album is called For the Demented. It came out, when did it come out? November 3rd. So it's only a few months old. But, man, he is riffing all over the place on that song.
Yeah. He had a real Mustaine vibe to that vocal in the middle there.
Well, yeah. So if you don't know much about Annihilator, they're considered one of the big four of, you know, the Canadian thrash metal scene, along with Voivod and Razor. Sacrifice, I think, is the other one people tout. This is their 17th album, 16th
Jeez,
album?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jeff Waters is the main guy in the band. He's the songwriter. Now he's the vocalist. But there's always been different lineup changes. So many fucking lineup changes in this band. But now with Jeff on vocals now, I do hear the Mustaine.
Oh, yeah. He's got that kind of... it's not nasal, but it's like a, it's just a way the tenor of his voice sounds, when especially in that... the middle part of that song. He really did sound like him. Who was the singer during his name's on the tip of my tongue during the Set the World on Fire era?
Set the World on Fire. It's that was,
that guy was
93.
Yeah, that guy was phenomenal.
Yeah.
He wasn't with him very long.
Aaron Randall.
Yeah. Aaron Randall. That guy was amazing. I don't know. I kind of, whenever I think about Annihilator, I think about his voice.
Really?
Yeah. I just, you know, I haven't listened to a lot of the newer albums. I did listen to this one, but not the time it came out. I was swamped with other stuff, so this one kind of slipped under the radar too.
Hence,
being on this episode.
Yeah, I really liked Alice in Hell and Never Never Land. Those are the things. First two albums, different vocals on each album, of course.
Yeah,
that was the one thing about Annihilator. They never could really keep a steady vocal.
Yeah,
which. I don't know if it hurt him, but it probably did.
Yeah, no momentum. They never had a front man, really, to stand out back in those days, yeah.
And Jeff Waters has always been a phenomenal guitar player.
Yeah.
It's cool that he's... I don't know how he plays guitar like that and sings at the same time.
I know.
My brain could not work that way.
Yeah, there's a cool show. Someone put up the entire show of them on 70,000 Tons.
Oh, yeah?
And... I don't know how he just doesn't get distracted because people are splashing in front of him and stuff. And they're impressive live.
Oh yeah, I don't think I've ever seen them live.
I've never seen them live, but that video was they were intense. It was a bizarre. Seeing shows from that cruise is bizarre.
Yeah, just, I have to.
The people
get
doing like a little pit in the pool. Like,
I know, right?
Swimming around.
I definitely need to get on a 70,000 Tons. We should do it one year. I know one of our good listeners, Derek, goes almost every year. And
oh, really?
He's been trying to convince me to go. It's just time-wise and, you know, monetarily.
Yeah.
You know. But if they have that trifecta of bands that I have to see, you never know.
Yeah. And a couple of lineups ago, they had that trifecta for me, and I missed it.
What was that?
It was like Therion, Blind Guardian was on it, and then someone else.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it was just like, wow, really? Okay. I think Orphan Land were on it that year, maybe.
Maybe. But yeah. You can see Blind Guardian all time.
Yeah, yeah. It was more Therion. Yeah. That was sort of like, oh, boy.
This is the last tour, right?
Yeah.
He's not going to play any live anymore, right?
He'll play, well, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
I know they have a new album coming out.
Yeah, yeah.
So before that, we had some Black Anvil. And this is your first time hearing it. Let me get your opinions.
Yeah, right away. I love that. Like that. I mean, that it's just the one. So, well, we heard two songs. We played another one in between. But I was surprised at hearing that, and then you telling me that these guys, their previous bands or their the other
Your Idols, which is the New York hardcore staple, and then one of the guys was in Cro-Mags for a while.
That's crazy to me that you get that kind of musicianship from those guys. I mean, not casting aspersions on hardcore guys.
Right.
I just don't associate the, you know, progressive metal of what that we just heard to that type of roots, you know, like, oh, these are my musical roots as a band.
And I really like their style. I really like the production. It's not overproduced, but it's produced well,
yeah.
where everything has its right place. And we're talking about like some of the guitar riffing and then some of the clean guitars on that song.
Yeah.
Totally remind me of like, you know, late 80s, like thrash, like Ride the Lightning, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
It's very influenced by that for sure.
Yeah, no, I can hear that. I did was surprised by how well I liked their Queen vocal approach.
Yeah.
Which, you know, in bands like that, sometimes they can go for a more like, they're not so confident about their Queen vocals, so they'll sort of fade them in the background or something, mm-hmm. or like layer them with production effects, but not these guys. They were right up front and center. Yeah, so yeah, that's cool. I'm going to have to go check out the entire album now.
So before we head out, we're going to end the show with our tribute to Worrell Dane. But is there any topics you wanted to get to before we get to there? I did something I want to talk about.
Okay.
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame snub of Judas Priest.
Yeah, that did happen.
So what, Bon Jovi got the nod?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll admit right here, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame doesn't mean shit. It really doesn't.
It doesn't, but it does.
The only cool thing about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is the cool show they have on HBO.
Yeah,
and I would have loved to see Judas Priest part of that.
It's funny, for all the, you know, times metal fans, and I know I've said it too, where we say we don't care about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and then we get mad when, say, Judas Priest gets snubbed. But they're going to get in there eventually. They just weren't a first ballot Hall of Famer, I guess. You know?
Well, the way it works is you have to be nominated, and then you have to be voted in.
Yeah.
So even to get the nomination it's difficult, apparently. I don't know.
It took a long time for, I think, Guns N' Roses to get, or not, no, I think Guns were first, but it took a long time for Deep Purple to, because they were nominated over and over again. And
I mean, it's time for Judas Priest to be in there. It's time for Iron Maiden to be in there.
Iron Maiden, definitely. That is a glare. The fact that they haven't even been nominated yet is a little bit, but you know, I'm okay if Priest get in there first.
Yeah.
They were the band first. They were around first, so.
Are you going to go see him next year?
I'm on the fence about that.
Apparently, the new album's supposed to be good. That wasn't the last album.
Yeah, so. Oh, I love the last album. But yeah, Firepower, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah,
I can't wait. I don't know if I'm going to go see them. I'm not a fan of that venue.
It's on. I haven't been to that venue yet. It's at this new Sugarland, was it Smart Financial Center?
Smart, yeah.
So it's like the newest big venue here, which isn't actually far from us at all.
No, it's literally right down the street.
And Judas Priest is actually playing the night of my wedding anniversary. So that'd be a fucking great present, right?
Yeah.
Go out to dinner and then go see Priest? Come on.
The problem with that venue is that there are really no cheap seats, unfortunately.
No, and the parking, I heard, is horrible. And yeah, but... That's why they didn't get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this. I mean, because I'll play devil's advocate. Bon Jovi are deserving, you know.
Are they?
I think so. I mean, I think
I'm not a fan, but...
I think that they... If it weren't for Bon Jovi, if I never got exposed to them, I probably wouldn't have gone down the path of being a rock and metal fan, so...
Okay, I can give you that.
When I saw that, I was sort of like, hey, you know what? Good for Bon Jovi. Like, I feel bad that Priest didn't get in, but Bon Jovi, I think, deserves a place, so...
I'm trying to pull up the list of nominees and who actually got in. Yeah, I guess you're right, because one of the very first shows that I ever saw was, I was really into Skid Row, like, in the late 80s. And I saw, my parents took me to see Skid Row open up for Bon Jovi,
mm-hmm.
and we took off when Bon Jovi started playing, because we couldn't get into it.
Huh.
But, yeah. Whoop, I don't know.
American rock Bon Jovi. Just good old American rock.
So the inductees,
Tommy and Gina,
2018 are Bon Jovi, The Cars. The Cars, I can see for sure.
Oh yeah,
good band.
Yeah, Rick Ocasek.
Dire Straits, yeah. The Moody Blues.
Sure.
I mean, how many? They have a couple of hit songs. I mean, that were really popular. But how?
Yeah, sometimes the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame just seems like, oh yeah, they're an old name that's been around a long time. Sure, they're in the Hall of Fame. We just remember all the old bands that actually sold millions of records. Is that what it's turned into? But, you know, whatever.
I see the inductees, but where are the nominees?
I think the problem is that the criteria for making it in there is very vague. I get the band's first album might be released 25 years ago. I get that criteria. It's just the actual artistic criteria. Like, you know, it's very vague as far as what bands or what artists would qualify. I think it would be almost more interesting if the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame did other things. Like, they would only pick one artist per year and maybe do, like, album, what album would make into the Hall
of Fame. So here's a list of the nominees that came out. So Bon Jovi, who got in. Kate Bush, The Cars, who got in. Depeche Mode. I like Depeche Mode a lot, but are they rock and roll? I can see them being there. They have a place, I think, in the history of music, you know?
Yeah.
Dire Straits, who got in. The Eurythmics. I could see the Eurythmics being there. They were definitely an influential band.
Yeah.
Jay Giles Band, Judas Priest, who did not get in. Y'all need to fix that shit. LL Cool J. I can see that. I mean, Public Enemy and some other bands of some rap groups have already made it in there.
I don't see LL Cool J. I don't really.
I mean, he's been around for a long time.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
Beastie Boys are already in there. I mean, but again, why not LL Cool J?
Again, see, it's hard for us to know. Like, what's the criteria?
Yeah.
Just because he's like a popular actor now on TV?
MC5, the Moody Blues, who got in. Radiohead. I can see Radiohead being in there because they're definitely an influential band in that genre, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rage Against the Machine. I don't like them, but I could see them fitting there. The Zombies. I can definitely see them being there.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they had some great songs from, you know, from that era. I don't know. I guess my only complaint is no Judas Priest.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just so in the dark about the criteria of the selection process.
I don't really know.
It's just people who have votes and they cast votes and there's no discussion or no debate, you know? At least I'll give when they're trying to select people to the Baseball Hall of Fame or the NFL Hall of Fame, these writers get into a room and they hash it out and they discuss these things and stuff and there's a process about it.
So I got a question for you. Have you read the Bruce Dickinson book, What's His Button?
Not yet.
Do you have it?
I've sort of flipped through it and read sections of it.
Yeah.
But not like front to cover in one sitting. No, I haven't done that.
Okay. I've started. It's very good.
Yeah.
I wanted to finish it during my holiday break, but it didn't happen.
I almost feel
I wound up getting, I got the Barnes & Noble had an autographed version of the book.
Oh, cool.
So I got that.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
I almost feel like I know so much of his story just because I've read so many interviews with him over the years that there's nothing much in that book that could surprise me.
But you know what I'm excited for?
What?
Maybe new solo material?
Well, that does surprise me. And the fact that they're talking about it again, because the last time I heard about this was 3 years ago when...
Pre-cancer. I think that sidelined him a lot.
Sure.
He's working on the new Iron Man album.
I kind of thought that might have put the kibosh on it just completely. Mm. But yeah, Dr. Metal would let me know. Well, he had done an interview with Roy Z.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they mentioned, I think it was off air, was that Roy was in a recording studio in Los Angeles and Bruce met him down there and they were working
on
stuff.
I'm going to call Dr. Metal out right now. He needs to become a guest on the show.
Yeah, he's a hard guy to get corralled.
Yeah, he's going to do it. Yeah, the book is really good so far. I'm excited for solo album because they said the first song on the new Iron Maiden album,
If Eternity Should Fail,
was originally written as a solo song.
Right, yeah.
And he said he's going to do that for another version of that song, just like Bring Your Daughter to the Slaughter, how he did that back in the day. It was a solo song that made it to an Iron Maiden album.
Yeah.
There can be two different versions of that song, I think.
Yeah, and what's surprising about that song is especially how riff-driven it is, you know, like in towards the main bulk of the song. Roy Z wasn't credited on the songwriting. So it's like, wow, is that something that Bruce just came up with himself entirely, like with like a vocal melody or something, and then Maiden filled in the details?
Maybe.
Because I don't think of Bruce as...
Maybe the Roy Z version will be completely different.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, the melodies will be the same, but maybe the guitar will be completely different.
Because the way that Bruce writes his solo material is he has Roy come up with riffs, sends him music, and then he walks around with it, like, listening to it and thinking about it, and then he puts, you know, decides what to do. I mean, I know Bruce writes music, but... he's not like a gifted guitarist or anything like that, so that'll be interesting. I'm excited now.
Here's the part of the show I didn't really want to get to, but we have to.
Yeah,
we got to pay tribute to Worl Dane, who sadly passed away about 2 weeks ago now. He passed away in his sleep from a heart attack, heart problems. phenomenal vocalist, one of my favorites of all time, really cool guy. I went back and listened to the interview episode we did with him. What episode number? It was like
140 something?
156. 156. MSR cast. It's still out there. Do yourself a favor, go listen to that episode. We had originally planned to do a full tribute episode to Worrell. We started recording it when everything went to shit.
Yeah.
And we couldn't anymore. That's when we had John Winningham from Texas Metal Show here to pay tribute to him. It was hard to pull a set list from like 15 songs from like his whole catalog. It was even harder to pick just two to play tonight. But I think I got two great songs. One, first of all, we're going to get into from his solo album called Praises to the War Machine. We're going to get into a song called When We Pray. And then we're going to get into my favorite Nevermore song of all time, the title track from the In Memory EP, In Memory. I think that that In Memory EP is my favorite thing that the band ever did. The original songs on there are great. The covers are okay, but like this song and then Matricide are two of my favorite tracks of all time.
Yeah.
But do you want to come say anything? Okay. We'll edit that out. But yeah, so I mean, Worrell was definitely a talented guy, amazing vocalist, great lyricist. He made what Sanctuary and Nevermore are.
Indescribable voice. He had. No one could sound like that guy, or no one will ever sound like that guy. He just so much character in the way he approached. I don't even know if you can call it like Queen singing. It was just Worrell Dane, you know,
his own style.
His own style. He was one of the most unique vocalists in metal, all of metal.
He was such a nice guy too. I got to meet him a few times, and I remember the last interview I got to do with him. We somehow started talking about like the Marvel movies, and he told me afterward, he's like, it was like one of the best interviews I've done on this album rotation so far, because I got to talk about cool shit. And then we talked about him coming on Metal Geeks, and we reached out at one point. He replied back, and he's like, you know, when we start doing another album promotion, totally down for it. Let's do it. That'd be a lot of fun, because he was working on his new solo album, and that he was in Brazil when he passed away. So fortunately, that's never going to happen.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he was in the Josta show when he was in Brazil.
Yes, I listened to
when Josta was in Brazil, and that was an episode that came out this year. It was a good one to listen to.
Yes.
Just like them talking about like just different things about their lives, a lot of like biographical information that he like unleashed in that episode. My only personal memory of him was after the In Flames show in December 2000, In Flames, Nevermore, Shadows Fall.
Yes.
After the show, after like a lot of the people had cleared out, me and a gaggle of other metal fans, like five of us, were like around the tour bus by the door, and he was there. And I remember, I just met him. I just said like nice to meet you, and like shook his hand and everything. He's like, hey, let's all move over to the front of the bus, like where the engine was, because it was cold as hell that night. So we're like out there warming ourselves by this bus with him, like talking to someone, and yeah, it was cool. It was like he was just really nice. And I remember, like, just
he loved his fans.
Yeah,
for sure.
Just feeling like, yeah, there's a cool guy, like unpretentious and stuff. And everyone in the band was that I had met that night. I met everyone in Flames, everyone in Shadows Fall, everyone in Nevermore. And but he generally stood out for like I just those weird things you remember about him saying, "Come over here, guys. You know, you're gonna freeze," and stuff like that. So yeah, nice man.
Where was that at? That was
Fitzgerald's. Yeah,
Fitzgerald's. Okay, I think I remember that.
Yeah.
I was at that show for sure.
Yeah,
because I remember the tour they did with Iced Earth and Destiny's End.
I think that was before that time.
Yeah, it was. I believe that was.
I missed that one. Yeah,
it was at Cardi's.
Right, I missed that show.
And, by the end of the night, he was a little inebriated.
Yeah,
and like I have if you've seen that picture on my Facebook of him just like basically holding himself up on me. We're playing pool together and stuff like that. He was such a nice guy.
Yeah.
And I was such a fan of him already. It was an amazing experience for a young metalhead to be like, why is this dude hanging out with us?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That show was pivotal for me because
I filmed that show too. I have bootleg of that show.
I think you show me parts of
which
that.
Which is on the internet somewhere. You go to YouTube and look up Nevermore.
Yeah.
From, I think it was 99 or 2000.
Yeah.
It's out there.
That was the first show where I actually met a band.
Yeah.
And they were all so accessible, and it just shattered this myth I had of like everything being like off limits, and you can't talk to these people, and you can't meet them. So he was definitely a part of breaking that sort of thing, and where I realized, oh, in metal, it's different.
Yeah.
There is no barrier between us. We're all the same, you know? We're all just metal fans, basically, so.
Well, thank you, Worrell, for all the enjoyment and happiness you've brought to metalheads everywhere, especially my wife is a huge fan. And I don't know what else to say of it. I mean, you're a definite talent, and you're going to be missed for sure.
Gone too soon.
Way too soon.
Too young.
So let's check out these two tracks and pay tribute to Worrell Dane, and rest in peace, sir. So we would be remiss if we didn't let everybody know where to find us on all of our social media. So of course, you can find MSRcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. I don't post on Instagram as much as I should, but we're in talks to change some of that kind of stuff. So at MSRcast on the Twitter and Instagram, at MSRcast official on Facebook. Of course, you can reach out to us on our email, MSRcast@gmail.com. You can find our sister show, Metal Geeks Podcast, at Metal Geeks on all of the social medias. And you can find...
I'm at the Metal Pigeon on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I wish I could drop Facebook, but I can't. But
can't do it.
Yeah, it just I get the feeling that people don't see like a lot of the stuff that I post on there, and it's, you know,
it's true.
Part of the frustration. Yeah,
that's not my frustration with Facebook.
Yeah,
but yeah. So the Metal Pigeon on all those things. Go to themetalpigeon.com and read his musings about all things metal. And thanks for tuning in.
Yeah.
And, oh, what else do we have to say?
Keep it metal.
Yes, keep it metal.
lines we share. We'll be right back. week, Geekazoids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.